Hey, y'all. Winning at Life. Live Financial News Talk Radio. It is Financial Talk, so what do you want to talk about tonight? Yeah, it's live show, so you can call in. Or you can reach out to us through the Winning at Life app. This little handheld computer I hear. I'm on Facebook Live and Periscope as well. You can join us that way. We're live streaming. The smartphone. You could reach out to me through it. You can text me, email, call me through the Winning at Life app. You should download it. Make it a part of your daily life. There's a number of things we're going to do to even add more resources coming up here on it. But one of the cool things is these articles and stuff we talk about on the show, and I do a lot of reading, and we're adding this to the blog, which when you go to gregoryricks.com, upper right hand corner, I believe is the blog where you can click, touch, however you use your computer, handheld computer, your laptop, so forth. And articles and stuff that I come across, a lot of resources. We're adding stuff to that every day. It's just, and I read a tremendous amount, and it probably will overwhelm you, but there's going to be some cool stuff for you to use there.
If you're looking for some extra money, look around. Maybe look in your living room, maybe look in the dining room, maybe look in the attic. Saw a story on Fox Business's Strange Inheritance where Jamie Colby was talking to these three brothers. And you've seen this story, or you've seen the show. And these three brothers, when
it was a Thanksgiving story, weren't they like, okay, go ahead.
Okay. So when mom and dad passed away and they had the estate sale, there was a bunch of stuff left over in the garage and attic. And they just put it in older brother's storage room. 2 years later, older brother gets a ping pong table and it'll fit perfect in the storage room. We just got to get all this junk out of here. And so they're like, okay, brothers, what do? We just sell it on eBay and split the money? So when they were going through it, there were some nice silver pieces. They had some silverware, like a tea set. And there was one like ornamental bowl that was made out of silver. And it was like solid pewter silver. It was huge, like the size of a pumpkin, about 6 pounds. And when you have 6 pounds of silver, it's probably worth something. So let's take all this junk to an auction house. They'll package it with a bunch of other estates that have some expensive stuff, promote it online, get a bunch of antiques dealers, get some real money out of this. So they did, and on the day of the sale, that big bowl went for $2,100. Brothers were ecstatic, except there was some other stuff that had to be bid on, and there was a painting came up at the end, and all of a sudden the phones lit up.
It was like about this size?
It was smaller than that. Small. It was a 9x7 painting. It had been sitting in the dining room where all three of the brothers grew up their entire lives.
Yeah.
They never paid attention to it.
It just wasn't that impressive, was it?
Kind of ugly, but some bidders liked it. So
how much was the reserve?
The estimate was $500 to $800, and so the opening bid was $250.
$250 right here. $500 is $1.
Ready to pounce. Amy's bidder from Germany.
My bidder definitely wanted to jump in right away.
That's right here. $500.
So do a half dozen other bidders.
$750.
It reaches the high $800 estimate and passes it. Then Kathy's French phone bidder enters the competition.
He was a cool cucumber. He was so calm. Every time I presented a bid, he would say, yes.
And all of a sudden said $5,000, and man, that happened in no time.
Everyone started creeping back into the sales room, and the bidding just kept going.
The bidding rises to $80,000, then $100,000.
The guy from England gets blown out, and it's going back and forth between Kathy, my wife, and Amy.
Are you thinking that the people on the phone are making a mistake, or they know something that you don't?
They know something that I don't.
When it got up into the 100,000s, like I just went, oh my gosh, like this, and just kind of
200,000. Then Amy's German bidder ups the ante.
300. I'll take you 300,000.
Amy's bidder from Germany jumps it to 300,000. And now I'm really smiling.
Kathy's Frenchman is unfazed. He jumps the bidding to 400 grand.
We're at 450,000. Would you like to bid? Yes, bid.
$500,000.
I was in disbelief.
And the bids keep coming in steady increments to 600K, then 700.
800,000 is the next bid. 800,000 right here.
I was just running down my bids.
$830,000.
Trying to keep it together.
And my fella from France, all he said was yes.
I do have $860,000.
Finally, at 860K, Germany surrenders.
He bowed out.
Sold!
The painting goes to Kathy's anonymous phone bidder in France with commission, $1.1 million. Vive la France!
Now, a little extra applause there. That was Jamie Colby's report from Strange Inheritance. History was made here because it's the first time that Germany has ever surrendered to France. Yeah. Did you already see this episode?
I've seen this episode, and I know more.
Yeah, so you know where the painting came from?
Yeah.
But hang on. How could this odd painting that spent decades in a New Jersey dining room, unnoticed and unremarked upon, be worth $1 million? Amy gets clued in by her losing German bidder.
He said, Amy, it was a Rembrandt. He said, I've been looking for this painting my whole adult professional career.
It was a Rembrandt.
And he couldn't afford to pay any more for it. He probably had everything he had at stake trying to get it. Leveraged everything.
Yeah, and not only was it a Rembrandt, it was a part of a series of five that he did on the senses. We know where three of them is. There was two missing.
There's still one missing.
Yeah, so it's in somebody's attic, maybe?
Unbelievable. And it's still the interesting part of the story is how their dad ended up with it. You know, he was a business guy, did a lot of traveling, nothing remarkable, except he ended up with a Rembrandt and maybe he knew what he had, but never talked about it or anything. Or could he have not known what he had? But ultimately the French buyer, right? The French.
Yes, the French bought it. French
that buyer sold it for a significant increase to someone else.
Well, we don't know who it is, but the speculation is it could be an antiques dealer. It could be a guy who's the curator for a museum with deep pockets. It could be a billionaire who's just a Rembrandt enthusiast.
But he sold it. He did not keep it. He had another buyer for it. So it was very interesting. You know, just you're going to have people going out to those eBay sales, garage sales, estate sales. You can never tell what's in somebody's attic. And I saw another episode of that show recently. This guy grew up looking at this map that was in the attic and unfolding it and all. And it goes back to, I think it was the 1800s, a map of Texas before Texas became a state, you know, and it was basically used to get people to move from other parts of the country to Texas. There's land. And that map that he fooled with as a kid went for a lot of money. It was like one of 12.
So after the show, you mind if I dig around your attic for a little bit, just see what's going on?
My house is too new and I didn't inherit anything. So you'd be, you know, you can clean up some dust and leftover parts from assembly. But I think, you know, there's some old houses. We've got relatives.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to, you know, I remember being my grandmother's house as a kid. I bet you there's some stuff still up there because that house still there. It's been empty a few years, but the stuff is still there.
What?
Yeah.
It's just sitting there, huh?
Yeah.
This is where all these episodes start. Someone passed away years later because homeboy got a ping pong table. They decided to take it to the auction house. If that silver bowl hadn't been in the stuff.
Yeah, it's not the silver bowl. It's just the ping pong table's the priority.
Right. The ping pong table was the priority. If it hadn't been for the silver bowl, they wouldn't have taken to the auction house. They just would have sold the stuff in a garage sale or online.
Well, the one with the map was actually about something else.
We would have lost a Rembrandt. We would have lost a 400-year-old painting, if not for a ping pong table and a silver bowl. Bizarre stuff going on out there.
Well, remember the story of the heist we covered earlier in the year?
You know, it's another heist?
No, that heist we covered where it was the people had stole it. I think it was over in Oklahoma.
No, it was Arizona, where they ended up. I don't remember where they stole it from, but they just walked out with that big painting. I remember that.
Yeah, and actually they didn't live too far away, but it was just hanging in the bedroom for years and years. Did you see that article I sent to you regarding the scammers. Well, it actually happened to a lady, and she lost because of a robocall. Ended up, she lost like over $300,000. If you don't remember that, we'll reprise it tomorrow as well.
I don't remember that story.
Okay. I'll make sure you have a copy of that, and we'll talk about that, because this was revealed in news recently. And it's really important for the listeners to know, because you get these scam calls all the time, and you kind of like, yeah, okay. And you hang up on them, which most of us do. But a lot of people do not hang up on them and continue conversations, and it doesn't go well. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow night.
Yeah, we were probably going to talk about scam calls tomorrow anyway.
Okay, good. It's that season to be careful.
All right, for our next adventure, we are going over to Dresden. Dresden, really, the only thing most of us know about Dresden is what they bombed the snot out of in World War II, right? We all know that. But Dresden is the capital of Saxony. You know, Anglo-Saxons, they're Germans. And Saxony is where the German part of the Anglo-Saxons come from. So Saxony has been there for centuries and centuries. And in 1724, they had this royal house that they kept all the treasuries. And it was sort of like the royal family's museum for the nobility. And this is like their crowns and their jewels and stuff. And they opened it to the public in 1724. And then it became sort of like the people's museum. Here's all of our national artifacts and whatnot. Well, thieves overnight in the early hours of Monday in the German city of Dresden, which I guess technically it would be Sunday night here, but basically this morning, to get around the security apparatus is the first thing we all have in our minds. How do you go steal stuff from this place? It's called the Green Vault. There's a little cabin in the back where the servers are, the computer servers, and also the computers that run the security alarm, connect to the internet, all the electric stuff. They don't really have that stuff built into these old buildings, so they had to make a little separate building out back for all the tech stuff.
And where is this at?
Dresden, Germany, Saxony. Okay. And so what they did is they went out and they figured out, I don't know if they had blueprints or whatever, they set fire to that building in the back. If you cut the power to the place, the alarm company gets notified. There's a battery backup, and the cops are sent if you cut the power.
But that's in that building.
Yeah, they don't cut the power to the building. They set the building on fire. For some reason, there's no alert that goes to the security company. The system breaks down, and they get the effect of being able to cut off the power without the alert going to the security company. So then they just cut through the metal bars on the first floor, bent them back, got in, stole over $1 billion worth of stuff. They haven't given us a list of everything they've stolen.
Billion.
They've said this is over $1 billion worth of jewels, artifacts, and collectibles, and it's basically the biggest, most awesome museum they have in Saxony, and they looted the thing. Some things we know.
You're telling me they cleaned it out.
No, they didn't take everything, but they took, well, we don't know what they took, but here's what we know is in there, or at least was until this morning. The best known treasure is called the Green Diamond. It is a 41 carat diamond. It's safe, even though the museum owns it. I don't know if the thieves knew this, but it's on its way to the New York Metropolitan Museum of Art for a display. So they are lucky
good
as heck.
And they're probably in there last night looking for it. Like, where is it?
Yeah, they're probably crying, aren't they? Okay, so here's the stuff that was there. That it's just how lucky are they that their most precious artifact? Because that it's not just the fact they have a big old green diamond. It was like the gift of some other royalty from some other century past. But there's another gift from Russian Tsar Peter the Great that's a 648-carat sapphire. 648-carat? Isn't that like the weight of this desk? That's huge. There's a golden coffee service made in like 1701. There's some other golden statues that are encrusted with jewels and whatnot. But we think this may be the biggest theft since World War II. It's like Ocean's 11. Or Ocean's 12 or Ocean's 13 or whatever. But this really happened.
Ocean's movies.
They had a complex security system. They defeated it. They snuck in. Matt Damon and George Clooney snuck in, and they took all this stuff. Hope they had insurance, right?
They did.
All right. Anything else that you want to touch before we hit the numbers?
And that's actually the problem for the crooks is the insurance companies wanting them found.
They're probably more likely to track them down than the cops. Is that what you're saying? Right, they have more of an incentive.
More incentive, probably more resources. And, you know, there's just one of the problems is where you maybe could have done this like the couple did a few decades ago and drive off, and all they see is this car leaving. Can't see the plate or any, just see a car leaving. But now, you know, not a few blocks from where we are, I know there's a camera. on a street. I don't know what's in other buildings, there could be cameras, but I was reading a story the other day about Iceland, and I think we'll talk about that story tomorrow because it's a Bitcoin story. And it was crooks, and I'll give you the basis of this story, and I'm not going to tell you what part of the world is, but they hardly have any crime, so there's a hint. Hardly any crime. They all, and the nation only has about 180 people in prison. So, you know, they just don't have crime. And one of these crooks that kind of came up the idea was, I want to get into the cannabis business. Better yet, I think I want to get into the Bitcoin business. And the thinking of having computers that mine, you know, and basically it's algorithms to figure out the blockchain. And it's always the who gets paid is they get paid in coins, but whoever solves the transaction first. And he was thinking, this is like, this is a pretty good business to get into because you get computers running and they just make money for you if you get enough of them fast enough and such as that. So there's this, there's the basis of the story, but, and I'll tell you a little bit more. And then, you know, somebody finds out he's thinking about going into that business and he gets a phone call from somebody and says, why buy the computers when you can just take them? And we'll tell you more about that on the show tomorrow night. But it just kind of thinks about that as just like, and he was thinking about, you know, why you want to get in Bitcoin business. The processing is, it just makes you money if you're first. I get that. But some people's minds go a lot further.
Right. Of the computers. Than that. All right. I look forward to that.
So two big stories tomorrow. So many things. I always believe in sleeping on a decision or having a conversation. You know, at my firm, I had a meeting with my team this afternoon, as we do on Monday. We kind of finish up the day with a team meeting. I and the advisors get together in the last hour and a half, talk about some cases, some theory, and I just have a discussion with them. And one of the things is one of the advisors brought up a case, and somehow he took a real simple view of our part of one of our processes, the investments part, which is one of five things that we do, and just really shrunk that down and simplified it. And I said, yeah, if that's all he was looking at, he'd say, well, maybe I was expecting more from you there. And actually, we may have simplified it, but I'll tell you what, it is really complex what we do. But we have simplified it for you to understand and how to win with your money. But that's one of five areas we work in, which is income planning, investment planning, healthcare planning, estate planning, and I'm missing one. Oh, probably might be the most important, tax planning there. So that's five areas that we work in. And if somebody kind of tries to shrink it down to one part of one area, and we do so much more. But I said, listen, there's even more than just that, because we are somebody that people can come to and have a conversation to bounce ideas. And if you're not understanding something you're doing elsewhere, come talk to us. Let us be your second opinion, you know. And people come in and talk to us about things, and it's not maybe about the taxes or about the investments. And it might be something else they're thinking of doing. I've had people sit down and talk to me. Yeah, I'm out of work and I've got a non-compete, but you know, I'm looking, do I retire or do I buy this other company? And what they know is I will sit there and my team will sit there and reason with them a little bit and do some back and forth discussion and some critical thinking. And ultimately it's helping them work through that process. And it might just be a couple thoughts there exchanged that help them see a different version. And somebody might come in and say, you know, I just don't think I should pay you the fee for that investment planning, because I thought you were doing more. Well, we are doing more, but we bring so much more to the table. And if that's all you have is narrow, it's okay. you can go elsewhere or do it yourself. But it's these so much more that we bring to the table. And all of you know that listen to the show and have listened to James and I for over 9 years know that it's so much more. And what we want, and you don't have to worry about being embarrassed or like even calling the show. You know, Jane calls into the show, but and Jane puts her name up on the board. It's Jane, and it's not Jane. If it is, well, that's rare. But, you know, and then somebody will call and say, you know, I've got a friend. Okay. They probably aren't talking about a friend. They might be talking about somebody else or maybe themselves. We get that. But you can call into the show and have a conversation here and bounce some ideas. The same thing at the firm. We're going to help you with some ideas. And this was where we had a meeting recently that I stepped in on, as I do most of the time, step into meetings and sit in and see what's going on and help with some of maybe the critical thinking, just to come in and add some additional questions or be there as a presence. And somebody, a lady came in and she is retired, health a little bit declining, worried about long-term care, worried about being in her home. And I got to brought up to speed on what's going on, and she has considerable assets. She's okay financially, but the long-term care situation, because wasn't going to work for her to leverage that because she doesn't have the health to qualify. And she was like, her focus was kind of wanting to stay in her home. And I got to talking to her and delved into her wealth a little bit more. And I said, you know, the long-term care, you're not going to qualify for, but what I'm more concerned about is not, and she, you know, she has a trust and has a custodian and so forth on the assets. But what I shifted to was more concerned about her and her well-being as a human. And I said, with your health, it is going to decline. I said, I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm worried about you. I'm not worried about your money. You're going to be okay. You've got, if you were earning 0% going forward, you're not running out of money if you were living to age 100. But I think we both understand you're not going to get to age 100. So I'm worried about who's making the decision on taking care of you in that home. Who's making the decision when you can no longer stay in that home? Who's making the decision when you need the care such as long-term care? We're not talking about the insurance, meaning you're needing help to function as a human. That's what long-term care is you can't do all of the daily activities like feed yourself or remember to take your medicine or bathe yourself. You know, these are kind of normal human functions that we can't do ourselves, that we need daily help. That's what really long-term care is. And I said, who do you have to make those decisions? And she says, you know, and I'd already realized she had discussed with her husband died a number of years back. And she says, well, I really don't have anybody I trust with those decisions. I said, while you're still of good health, because she actually drove and everything to the office, and knowing she has health issues, serious health issues, I said, what I would like to see you do is go figure out where you're wanting to live, a place that you can go live there and have your lifestyle. But when your health changes, that you need more help in these next few phases of life, that you've got a little bit of time left in your go-go years, then you're shifting to no-go and then to the really slow go. And I said, that's all that, those phases aren't far from you. I said, what I'm worried about is that getting lined up for you now while you can do that, because I'm worried about you as a human if you don't have those decisions made. So this isn't about staying in your home. It's about what are you going to transition to, and you should figure that out now. She's not going to become a client. We're not going to get her asset. Maybe we will. I don't expect to. I'm more concerned about her doing the right things, and she's going to utilize our estate planning services that we have with Wes Blanchard to help make sure the documents are in place, that the money spent to take care of her through the remaining phases of life. So that's when I talk about It's not just investment planning or income planning. There's so much more when you care about people and look out for people. And that's what I think I've put in place. And that's what I try to impart to my people to create a legacy going forward to help people when they need help with decisions.
All right, Gregory, let's talk about sources of retirement income, because I still hear skeptical people when they listen to the show and they're like, yeah, you guys talk about having sources of income, but really who can have like 6-7 streams of income? It's not that crazy. And people just haven't really thought about it. They're like, I tell them, think about all the streams of income you'll have in retirement. And they're like, okay, so my Social Security and then whatever I've saved up. And then their mind turns off and they haven't even thought about where all these other streams of income could come from. You know, part-time jobs kind of obvious, but a lot of these are just passive streams of income that you don't really have to do a whole lot to make happen. And that might not be the best description, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Well, help me out here a little bit. Where are you going? Because we know, you know, what people have accumulated, pensions, Social Security, income from various assets, and assets can create multiple streams, because I don't look at as well, I have Social Security and I have my money. They think of it as two sources. I think it is more, because that money works in different, it all doesn't work the same way. It's rare. Well, if all your money you have saved outside of Social Security, and assume you have a pension, it's all IRA money. Well, maybe that is one source, but most people have a little variation on that. So I'm interested to see where you're going, because one of the things that if you're going there is the side gig, the side hustle, where people think they're going to have that after retirement. It turns out most don't. And how people should fare is don't expect to have the side hustle when you retire, because most won't. But those that do, then it's lanyap. Now I'll let you continue.
Okay, so let's start with the first one, because the most base stream of income you're going to have in retirement is Social Security, because everyone gets it, and everyone, well, almost everyone gets it and qualifies for it. There's a few never beneficiaries.
High percentage of people are eligible for Social Security.
Right. So and that's an obvious one that people know about. The next one is your own savings, like retirement accounts, 401ks, IRAs. Everyone gets that. Everyone's still with me. Everyone nodding your head. They're nodding their head, Gregory. So then it gets a little more complicated. Roth accounts. People don't really think about that, but still kind of counts as your own investments, right?
Yeah. And I look at that as a different block of money. And I look at that as the back end money, because it is tax-free coming out. Roth
money.
Why'd
you use that term, back end?
Because I'm not using it as early income. I'm using it as add-on income later, because it doesn't increase your taxes. It doesn't show up on the 1040 under current law.
Okay, the next stream of income is pension income. I know people don't get too excited about that because there's not as many as they used to be, but so a lot of people still get it. What are we down to, like a fifth of the population that's going to be doing it?
But I still talk to people that have pensions.
Okay, so now let's get out of the more obvious ones into the stuff that still exists. If you have a paid off house, you have a couple of sources of income there. You can either pop a reverse mortgage, perhaps, or people have gotten a reverse mortgage and gotten an income stream off of that. Sometimes a reverse mortgage just washes it. Or I've seen people do cash out refis. If you get in a pinch and you need a pile of money, you can dip into some of the equity if you can get it refied out. That could be a source of money in retirement.
Could be. It is an option.
People using life insurance strategies where you overfund or max fund, or there's different terms for it.
Well, let's simplify it. Define it as cash value life insurance, like whole life, universal life. Is more common examples where you can take money out of those policies.
Right. And take income from the policy, sometimes tax-free perhaps. I mean, there's different.
Yeah. When you could structure it as a loan, do you get taxed on that money you borrowed to buy the house?
Do not. It's
how about
nice.
That car you bought? I know your wife has a car. I think it was fine. Let's assume it was financed. Did you have to pay taxes on that?
Thus far, tax-free.
Here, if I loan you, I've got $100 here. How about I loan it to you? You give it back to me. Are you going to be taxed on that?
Well, there's not a spot on the 1040 for it. So
no, see, if you borrowed the money from life insurance, and even if you borrowed out more than you put in and you died, there's a death benefit, right? Well, that's going to be deducted from the death benefit. So your loan was washed by a tax-free benefit.
Okay, let's do another little financial product that could end up with an income stream coming to your mailbox, and that's health insurance. Some of these health insurance plans have the ability, if something happens, to trigger.
A savings account?
Yeah. You want to talk about that then?
I'll let you continue. But it's the health savings accounts we're talking about that can be put to it's unique abilities because it can be put away pre-tax, growth tax deferred, and come out untaxed because if you use it for healthcare costs, and it also could be rolled over to a qualified plan.
So that's one, and you really like that because, you know, the three tax favorable statuses just makes you so excited.
And you know, we're going to spend probably more in our back end of life on healthcare than we are during our working life.
Long-term care insurance could pop a situation where they start sending you a check. It could be a source of income, not one that you'd be excited about having to take, but it could be a regular check.
And it will help if you have that coverage and end up in that situation.
Stocks and mutual funds can be a source of income. Whether you live off the interest, whether you live off slowly selling it off, or whether you live off the dividends, it could be a source of income.
Yep.
I mean, there's nothing to argue with there. Same thing with bonds. You know, you can take the yield when you cash them out. Everyone understands that one. We talk about the side hustle. That's kind of an obvious one. But I'm surprised we went this long without mentioning rental income. So common, people call in, they want to get in the rental business. It's passive income. It's money that just clocks every month.
A lot of people have some rental properties regarding whether it was by design or inheriting it, or they buy another house and say, well, let's just, instead of selling this one, let's rent it out. Good bit of people are in the rental business of some kind.
All right, now let's go to the little more obscure area, but still counts because if you can get it, money's money.
You're not talking about stuff in the attic, are you?
No, I'm not talking about that Rembrandt you left in Mama's attic. I'm talking about royalties, that song you sang, that book you wrote, an innovation you patented, whatever it is, the royalties from your intellectual property that can become an income source. I mean, long after that you actually worked and the work is done, you can still be getting money off
that. So you're talking about Taylor Swift's retirement plan.
Well, the Scooter Braun retirement plan
Scooter
now.
Scooter Braun.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
But that hit you wrote for Katy Perry back in the day, Gregory, you'll get royalties for the good checks for that from here on out. And then here's one of the least.
You know, one of the top 10 earners in country music is somebody that I remember as a kid listening to, and she's top 10. Dolly Parton, the royalties. She's written so much stuff. It was staggering to see what she still makes a year.
And this last source of retirement income, we get calls about this on the show every once in a while, and they're always real excited. It's the mineral rights crowd. That is something. We've done this list before, and I've had to add that because we've had several calls on it. The mineral rights. How nice is that?
You know, that is really a powerful tool, even as it keeps handed down to the next generation and keeps getting split. That is nothing to kid around about.
Anything I forgot? That's our official list. I keep adding to it. You know, we have the running notes on some of these topics that we bring up on a regular basis on this show. But that's the latest iteration of our stream sources of retirement income.
I'm liking that. That's pretty good.
Imagine what that list is going to look like when we keep doing the show another 10 years. Because these are cumulative notes that we've kept over 10 years.
Yeah, and maybe, how about the category of, say, you've built a business, didn't sell it, but you've handed it off, or the next generation, but you keep just getting paid like you're there.
Oh, that's sweet, too.
And that's one of the ways when I talk to business owners about how they unwind their business is, you know, you have somebody tell, yeah, but, you know, my thinking is, how can we hand it off that you keep getting paid? You don't necessarily have to cash out, but can you keep drawing that salary for another 20 years for handing it off? And that, just thinking of that, it's just a source of income that just keeps coming on something that you built.
All right, I have one more financial piece of news before we walk out of here. And the NFL has auctioned off all the spots, or they sold off all the spots for the Super Bowl. And for a 30-second ad, how much is it this year, Gregory? What's the number up to?
Let me see. $2.1 million.
$5.6 million for
my gosh.
I know. And they're selling 77 national spots in the ad. So go ahead and do the math. NFL's doing fine.
Well, that counts me out.
All right, your home away from the show, winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app. If you need the services of a financial advisor, maybe you should start that search with gregoryricks.com. I'm James Parker, and we are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.